You're listening to a CNA podcast.
Hello everyone, it's Adrian here. And today we will talk about people at work who are not performing as they should. And Crispina, this actually reminded me of a story. When I was running an outplacement agency, helping folks to find new jobs, except I had this manager that cannot even manage a goldfish, so to speak. Plus, she has this habit of trailing into a whisper, making people around her think that she's talking bad about them. She eventually left the company, but not before I was fired from the company. So the twist to the story is I was a poor performer managing a poor performer.
Oh, wow. Hi, everyone. Crispina clocking in. Okay, I have to admit, I've struggled with this pretty much my entire career. I don't know if it's newsroom training or just me.
Just you.
But... Adrian says just me. But I get very impatient with people who can't do things well. And what do I mean by that? Like, you know, just do things fast to an acceptable standard. And I get particularly angsty if those people are very senior and they are paid very well. So in other words, for me, there should be a baseline in terms of competency, right?
Absolutely. I think it is one of the hardest things at work to deal with. And because of that, there's someone who brings experience into this conversation with us today.
Yes, please welcome Mr. Michael Han.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, he's a lawyer who runs his own firm, Han and Lu Law Chambers.
That's correct.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Welcome, Michael, to our podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You are in the hot seat because we're going to talk about a difficult topic.
Yes, hot potato, just shoot and I hope I can stay afloat.
Yes, okay. I'm going to start by playing a soundbite from a previous guest. He was a co-founder and CEO of a HR technology company. His name is Ryan Wong. We asked him how he builds such a successful company. It was worth more than $1 billion and he's got all these awards. And so this is what he said.
So to build a team that can strive with you, I would say is people and culture is number one to me. You need to hire the right people, retain the right people, and get rid of the wrong people. I will keep saying that because people do not like to talk about getting rid of people.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like if somebody is a poison in a culture, it's not a team player, it's not in a journey with you, you have to do something about it. Not fixing a low performer is a crime, right?
It's a crime?
Yes.
Okay.
Try
okay.
Telling that to the lawyer.
It's a bondage, I would say. Mm. So in a way, it limits your autonomy and freedom. It also erodes the value of the entire corporation. You said he built his company up to a value of $1 billion?
More than $1 billion, yeah.
Wow.
He was a co-founder.
He knows what he's talking about.
Right? He knows what he's
No, definitely he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
The proof is in the pudding, isn't it? I recently read a book, Stephen Bernard, I don't know whether you know him. It's quite popular. He wrote a book about some CEO diary.
Yes.
And he mentioned
Stephen Butler, Diary of a CEO. Yes,
correct. I don't really read management book, okay? And I read about politics, philosophy, because I'm always depressed. He said that when you start a company, develop a cult.
Developer?
A cult.
A cult.
C-U-L-T.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Okay, because you can distill from a cult,
okay,
certain values. Not that they go crazy
or they go
and bomb some subway or what. Yeah. But we are talking about the cult whereby they are all one focus.
Mm.
Okay, they would stay back late because they are on a mission.
Right.
They would sacrifice everything. And this is how you skyrocket a company. Mm. And these people grow together with you.
Right.
They are like part of your integrated DNA.
I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you know, I was thinking, right, in reality, it's not easy to get everybody who fits the same culture as you.
Definitely.
Right. We need to talk about, first of all, who do we consider as poor performers?
Mm.
I think we need to set the definition of what we think is a poor performer. Like Adrian was saying, is it just somebody who can't do the job? For example, if you're a teacher and your teaching is really quite bad or...
Or you cannot write if you're a journalist.
Gee, okay. Thanks, Adrian. Is it just outcome driven? Or could it be somebody who does not have the right attitude, who does not want to push? If you tell him A, he does B. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of things. Mm. So in your experience, what would you say is a poor performer?
Actually, I have a confession to make. During the COVID, most of the interview is done through Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then this gentleman came in. It was all suit and tie. I have a managing a branch in a law firm. Usually when they come in, you know, it's quite casual. They dress as best as they can, but not with a suit and tie.
Sure. Mm.
And this guy looks good. Everyone will look at him and say, oh, this boy is good looking. And then when he speaks beautifully, it's with an accent, we were impressed.
Yeah.
He answered all our questions,
press
all the right buttons. So, and he said he can write. Actually, he can write. Okay. And then we engage him. So he was put on probation.
Okay.
And that's where it went all downhill.
Why?
To your question, whether we can identify poor or average performer, what should we do about it? It will be second part. But you see it when you know it. A poor performer because the quality of work is not there. Mm-hmm. Forget about quantity.
Okay.
Yeah. I have someone who comes and she's just an intern. She's supposed to do a 3 months internship in a law firm. She will constantly come to you at the end of the day and say, Mr. Han, do you have any other things for me to do? Mm. To such extent that we were praying at the end of the day, don't come to us. You know what I mean? She will do her things. We check her quality and it's there.
Right.
And she's hungry for more work.
Right.
Another kind of scary kind of character is they don't do their work at all. So for example, with this guy that we employed, he got everything, the package. And then I check his work every week and I realized that they were not done at all. Mm. In a law firm, if you don't send out a certain letter, you don't write down a court hearing, it can be fatal. Because the court will be calling you and say, you know there's a hearing, your case can be dismissed. There are consequences.
Yes,
so these are the things that you can monitor and you can detect. And this individual is worrying. And not only that, you can't do your work. It's really quite bad. Really. But if you have an attitude whereby you spread the poison around, you badmouth people, you look at their private laptop and their chat history.
Right.
And see whether you know anyone is talking about them. About him, and then
I see all these red flag behaviors.
Yeah, so it's very scary. So there are two things I look at: competence and character. You can be competent, but if you do not have character to contain it, it's very scary. Because if you are incompetent but you have character, sooner or later you'll be competent. Because character is something about you are diligent, you pay attention, you are humble, you are. Oh, this is so important. You are teachable. You are teachable.
So you're saying that you would rather have someone who has all the good attributes of a good attitude and you can train them to be competent.
Yes, I think character comes before competency. I remember when I had my first interview, April Fool's Day 2000. I was just wet behind the ears, just graduated. My boss was there. He just asked for just one thing from me. Not a long interview because my boss is not someone who chat a lot. He just said, Michael, I just want one thing from you. Then I say, what? An honest day's work. He didn't say that, I'll give you this checkbox, you must meet all this, then you have this billing, you have this target, everything. Just give me an honest day's work. Since that day, year 2000, April Fool's Day, until now, to my best of my ability and touch my conscience, I've given him an honest day's work.
Okay.
It's very all-encompassing when you talk about honest day's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to go into defining it, but you know it. Someone is a good worker when you see him and you see her.
So you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah.
You don't have to quantify it. It's kind of like a gut feel. What do you think, Adrian? Have you experienced this before when you know when somebody is not cutting it?
Again, similar to Michael's experience, you get to find out when it's too late into the game.
Yeah.
Usually when people, just like who you describe, are full of charisma.
Yeah,
they have that halo effect. They seem to have a glow behind their head. You would think that, wow, this person is my Michael Jordan. Until, of course, you realize, cannot dribble the ball.
Yeah,
and everything own just goal, crumbled down. Own goal, even worse, yes. But having said that, usually when I see such things happening, I will always try to reflect. Is there any small little reflect that I might have missed out? In your case, when you look back and think really hard, were there any small little red flags that you potentially could have picked out?
Maybe a second interview. Or maybe to ask him to write something about himself and send to us. At that time, we really need someone. Because there is a shortage of manpower. So we tend to overlook. So once we brought him in, there's a probationer period.
Yep.
So after that, we have to let him go. That's a painful part. Because in my 25 years of career, I only let about two people go. Because I'm quite generous. To a fault. I don't know whether that's appropriate or not. I don't know whether I will run a company that's valued at $1 billion. But personally, one of my person that I admire a lot is Nelson Mandela. Okay, and he said, see the good in people. And then you will increase the chance of them revealing their better side.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
so aspirational, Michael, I have to tell you. Let's talk about that, right? About the two people that you said that you had to, you had to let go, right? Okay. So we've established that this person on the team is not quite cutting it.
Yeah.
Okay. In a big company like mine, there are protocols. I have to document things. We have to have all these chats and HR has to be involved. There is something called performance improvement plan. So my thing is that how do you even begin this conversation with this person? That first conversation where you're saying, hey, Crispina, we need to talk about your performance. So take me through that conversation. It's painful, right?
Yeah, it's painful. It's very painful, seriously, because the first thought that comes to my mind is, if that is my son, because I got three children, one of them is going SMU, okay? What happened if that is my daughter?
Right.
How would she feel if I were to go overboard and whatever? So that restrained me as a father. Now I know why when you are a father, then you understand. And it's so true. So that's my guiding light.
Okay.
What happened if that's your child? Okay, so that's my first thing that I go to.
So that's kind of like your framework of how you will approach it.
Yes. Some people might think that it's soft. You know?
But it's with kindness, right?
It's with kindness.
So start there first.
Yes, it's
with
empathy.
But you still have to break the bad news.
When you go before someone with a certain mindset, with a certain attitude, okay, it somehow changes the ambience of how you, open inverted comma, confront him.
Okay.
Okay. So if your mind is set on striving for a good outcome,
yep.
That's my daughter, that's my son, how will I, you know, teach him or her? And then if you have that mindset and you set it there, you somehow have a journey, a momentum to go towards,
okay.
a kindness momentum.
Right.
Okay, like Mandela's quote, okay, see the best in him. Okay, but there are just two of them that no matter how I try to counsel them, I would prepare myself. I'll have a lot of reports. Right. And I can see the work is definitely not done. You document everything. I interview people.
Oh, you interview others around?
No, I must interview those people who actually say that there is, yeah, there's certain accusation, certain allegation. So I want to hear two sides. That's important.
Sounds like such a lawyerly thing to do.
I don't want to be caught off guard. And definitely, I don't want to trip over my tongue, say the wrong thing. And don't be surprised, they do record. Nowadays,
oh, people record this
it's
conversation.
It's so easy to
just
record and everything. And they can go MOM or whatever.
Yeah.
So prepare, interview, get the facts. You are entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. Truth is the truth.
I like that.
So I approach him, close the door, private, don't mention names, okay? And assure him, tell him that I'm here to help. Then after that, list down certain things that is not done and see how is his reaction. If he's receptive, that's good. That's teachability.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
But have you had people who were not receptive?
Yes, I have people who argue back.
Blame everybody else.
Defending themselves.
For example, we lawyers write letter of demand. And there are certain figures that we write is outrightly wrong. In a year, how many months are there? This is a very trivial oversight. How many months are there in a year?
12.
Yeah, but this guy said there's 15.
Okay.
I'm not joking. We still have the letter. I think he said 13 or 15, but it's not 12.
So when you go to this person and say, look, this is obviously an error, right?
Yeah, I show him that's an error.
You should check it, right?
Yeah.
So then the response is...
He doesn't admit it.
I didn't write it?
No. He go to the extent that, yes, I write it, but he will give excuses. You know, it's outright wrong, black and white.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
But he give excuses. He will not say that it is his fault. He will say that either he's not properly trained, which is in a year, you know, it's 12 months. You put 13, 15, you don't need to be trained.
Yeah, so I've heard this quite a lot. When somebody is confronted with something, you couldn't do this as well as you should have. And they would say, but nobody helped me, what?
Tai Chi and, you know, push aside and things like that. Blame shifting.
I think, is it important to be honest and to say that, look, if you don't improve by a certain time, there is a possibility that you will have to go. Do you say that at this conversation? Do you put out the consequences real early or no?
Yeah, I think especially in our context, we tend to have this culture of kicking the can down the road because it's hard conversation ultimately. And we'll tell them, oh, you are actually great. You actually want to say something else. I heard of this school in Singapore where if anyone were to get consecutive 3 years of D or E, they would be fired. But because the supervisor just do not want to feel bad about them firing people, they will get D, D, and then a C to reset the whole thing again. So this group of poor performers will constantly remain in the school setting. Do you have similar experience where just saying all this, just trying to be a bit more upfront with them, it's just too hard because you just feel bad, you feel bad for them?
It's like baseball, like what you're saying, strike three and you're out. So for me, there's a lot of strikes. Because my character is such that I lean towards seeing the good in others.
Right.
Okay. I have an employee and his pattern is he would sleep the whole afternoon. So he will just sit down. Okay. His hand will be on the laptop or whatever. And then he will just doze off like that. Nobody dares to wake him up.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why. I think we have to give him feedback. We have to enable him. You know, we have to give him a chance, many chances. Okay. Up to a stage whereby, yeah, honesty. Honest day's work means that you must also confront with honesty.
Yeah.
Not brutal honesty. Okay, but humane.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but basically there has to be a plan, lah. You know what I mean? It's very complicated, actually. It's not so straightforward. Especially in a small company, it's different because you have a lot of agency and flexibility to deal with things. But like a school setting, for example, a poor performer can be hidden. And I would say even to some extent to be covered or help because they've been there for so long. Okay, what I'm trying to say in a long-winded way is this. A person is not necessarily just one poor performer. He could be a very good colleague, a very trusted confidant.
Okay.
He could be very hardworking, could be very just wonderful in terms of saying, okay, you know what? I'll do the weekend shift. But in other metrics, not quite succeeding. You know what I mean?
So does he cross the line?
Exactly.
Tolerance.
So how,
you know what I mean? Is he bring home the bacon? You know, the fruits of his labor, maybe not first fruit, but he brought the second fruit. That's why I brought this. I don't know whether this will be useful. This is the straight time. I'm holding up a straight
time. Okay, he's holding up this our competitor, which is the straight
opinion stars. Straight times on Monday, January 15, 2024. B4.
Okay. We celebrate all journalism here.
Yes. Okay, I'm reading out the headline. Competent jerks have a shelf life in the office. The keyword is competent jerks.
Yes.
So are you describing a competent jerk?
I'm describing an incompetent, nice person.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's the flip side.
Right? Yeah, that's the flip side. Incompetent, nice person and competent jerks.
Yes.
Yes. But both of them, there's a common thread that runs through your experiences with them.
So if we go by your character and your competency framework, right? Both will fail one lah.
Yeah, yeah. You're correct, correct.
Then how? Very complicated, right?
It is. Which I guess is something that Ryan has taught us really well. If you want to become a leader of a billion-dollar company, you just have to be a bit more practical, a bit more harsh, and really address where things is not going right.
Yeah.
I have seen many of that instance. I had a chat with a friend of mine. Similarly, he is working or managing an incompetent, nice person.
Yes.
Oh, this person just got a HDB lah. Going to be father soon.
Exactly.
Yeah, if we were to put him on PIP, it may lead him to be dismissed. Maybe not. Maybe I try to cover some of his work.
Yeah, and
that really become a bigger problem, right? Because things just compound. Where does it end ultimately?
You use the word need to be harsh and the other one is at the same time practical.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. To be realistic, because you're running a business at the end of the day, let's say this person is affecting bottom line. See, if I'm incompetent, but the work doesn't get affected, that means I can still cut a plot along. It's okay. But if your other employees will have to pitch in and clean up and therefore not be able to do their own work, then something is wrong in the matrix, right?
But some of them, they have special relationship with upper management.
Ah, that's a good point.
Okay lah.
Yeah, in my head, I was thinking about that.
How?
I had a friend who runs a recruitment business, a regional one. And then there's this incompetent intern that came in. And all the manager is like, oh, who hired this intern? Then look at the surname. Eh? Why the surname saying there's a CEO? Oh, CEO's daughter.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. And she eventually became, I think you just sit at the corner.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's tricky.
Who's going to cross the path? Because she can, over dinner, daddy, this so-and-so.
This Adrian.
He said something that I don't think is right. Oh, who is Adrian? You know what I mean? But those who are not competent, but nice person, well, that one also quite difficult to let go.
Yes, I think that is tricky. I mean, I totally understand where managers are coming from, right? I've never, thank God, was in a position to ask someone to go. The most I've said is, maybe this job is not for you. Maybe you should look for something else. That's never been effective, honestly, because if they don't quit, then you still have to deal with it. I think what Ryan was trying to say is that if it affects bottom line, affects the team, affects the work, then it has to be addressed. There are no two ways about it.
You know, preemption. I'll just share this. I don't know whether it's relevant. I got a good friend who runs a law firm. He's a small firm. He is a sole proprietor. He got many workers, but he needs people to be tight and give their best.
Yeah.
9 to 5, 9 to 6. That's all I ask of you. I'll pay you well. He called me and he asked me about this person, this particular person. Okay. In all my years of giving references, it's always, no matter how I master the right language to promote and to elevate someone, even though there are flaws, okay? But I'm careful to give two sides of the picture. But for this individual, I told him it's risky. I had a few days, at least 2 days of sleepless night. Again, empathy, you feel bad. But then, bottom line, you are running a company, you have many people that you have to feed. And if you run it to the ground, everybody suffers.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's really a balance of things. And sometimes you have to prioritize. You have to put what is important first, what matters first. And then you must be led by that. I know it's a difficult balance.
It is.
Okay. Everybody is accountable because we have our mouth to feed. I think it's important to go back home and make the right decision. Over time, you may stumble, but over time, make the right decision. And then you can sleep soundly, not furiously.
Not fretfully.
Fretfully.
So perhaps in closing, maybe you can share with us one success story of someone you thought may not have been good, but with time, coaching and leadership, ultimately things became better.
There's this lawyer who came to my branch and he was quite difficult. All kinds of boo-boo and slip up and everything. And he just started and just said, okay, today I want to go America and things like that. So this person went to America and done a lot of work, and there are deadlines and there are time bars. In our legal work, there are certain number of years to sue. If you miss that time period, 3 years, for example, okay, then you cannot sue anymore. And that is a personal liability. So it came dangerously close to those things. We put faith in this person. He came back and we talk to this person, we give feedback, and incrementally, we held his hand and we walked together. So over a period of nearly 10 years, we saw this person literally grow. And now that person is quite indispensable because character can be built. Then competency will follow. This is something that will be close to my heart. And if we are disciplined and focused, we will one day reach there.
Yeah. Okay, so there are always good examples. Not all have to be bad examples. Okay, I'll just summarize as a matter of closing. When I was reading a little bit about poor performers, two things stood out for me, and I think those are the two things you shared as well. One is that you have to call it out early. So my problem was always the fact that I tend to ignore red flags. Because like you, I always think, it's okay lah, new, right? Learning, right?
So you convince yourself it's actually not red, it's green. Or it's yellow.
Orange.
Doscon, orange or green.
And of course, it accumulates, right? That's one. The second thing that people say that you should do with poor performers is to document, almost like a journal, all the instances where this person dropped the ball or didn't do this, or somebody had to rescue them, or there were all these errors, etc. So the documenting thing, I think, is very...
Yeah, it's important. Nowadays, they are very quick trigger with social media.
Yeah.
I have a few cases, they come to me and say, hey, I didn't do really bad things, I've ask this person to go. And now over Facebook, he's saying all these things about my company and my character. It can be something that caused great agony to the employer.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It can cause great agony. Because you didn't take all these little steps to get to the big step, right? And then the final thing is to have a little bit of courage, I feel.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's not easy, and that doesn't come easy, especially to inexperienced managers. Mm. I remember giving a fairly low-ish rating to somebody who is supposed to be quite good, you know, like come in with a lot of potential, etc.
But you gave him a
low-ish rating. Okay, so that created a lot of angst. So again, like you, I had a couple of sleepless nights thinking, what am I doing? Am I going to ruin this person's career? But the thing is, I had to be true to my conviction that I was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I had the documentation and I had the assessment to back me up on the rating. So that was tough. Mm-hmm. And I would say it takes a lot of courage. Most people would just say, why all this headache? Just pass lah, just move this person along. Mm. But I think in the long run, it's good for the team. It's also good for the person.
Mm. Yep.
That courage and honesty is important for the worker
good
himself.
Feedback,
I want to share a cop-out moment when I was a much younger manager. I also have tons of sympathy for people. Mm. But there was this competent jerk. He actually can do his work quite well, but I just couldn't take him anymore because of internal politics. And I do not know how to say, because if the person is competent, why am I faulting him on? Office politics? That sounds a bit small-minded of me. Mm-hmm. So I did a cop-out thing. I actually passed his contact to other recruitment agency in hope that he'll be headhunted out from my company. But as I continue to grow as a manager, I realize, Crispina, just like what you said, certain times when you pull the trigger much earlier, it's not just doing a favor for the company, but you're also doing a favor for the individual. Because the longer he or she stay in this job that is obviously not suitable for him or her, the less opportunity, cost, or time he or she can actually gain in another role that may be much more suitable for them. So I've learned it the hard way and over too much time, but now I do learn that, yes, it might still be painful, and I do like what Michael said, look at them as your children, but ultimately, you also want and wish the best for that person.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just that the best for him or her isn't in this company.
So to summarize, to do it with a little bit of kindness, in fact, with a lot of kindness, I suppose, but to be honest and realistic.
Mm. And like what you ended just now, not just courage, sometimes audacity.
Yes.
To push yourself out of that shell and to put your feet down and do the right thing.
Yeah. Although some people don't have any problems firing la.
Mm. We'll invite those people onto the show for an upcoming episode. It will be a very short episode. Just fire.
It'll be interesting though, I think, right? Because if you are the kind of boss who says, don't make the cut, just let go.
Mm.
There are people like that. Yeah. Thank you, Michael, for coming on the show. Thank you to our listeners. You know where you can find us. We are on Spotify, on Apple, on CNA, and on the Me Listen app. Thanks to my team for helping with all the back-end production, and thanks for listening. Till we see you next week.